So we're here on Lamed Ches, okay?
Okay. Excuse me, but I'm going to have to be a few minutes late.
Okay. Whenever you come, you come. So let's just review on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the Mishnah records a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva about Nis Arsa Vinis Garsha, which means she's still a Besula, but she already had Erusin. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, once she had Erusin, she's out of the picture as far as Knas is concerned. Rabbi Akiva says, no, she does collect Knas. And not only that, the Knas doesn't revert to the father, but rather she herself collects the Knas. The Gemara analyzes Rabbi Yossi and says that Rabbi Yossi is based on the Pasuk, Asher Lo Orosa. The Torah clearly indicates that the Nara that we're talking about in the Parsha of Knas is Asher Lo Orosa. That she was never in an erusin, she was never in a marriage relationship. But if she was already mu'reses, then she doesn't get knas. Rabbi Akiva says no. The Asher Lo Orosa is only qualifying that the father gets the knas. We're qualifying that. That halacha that the father gets the knas is restricted to a case of Asher Lo Orosa. Once she's Orosa, then the knas is no longer the father's knas. He loses his chus, his yad, to collect the knas. It now reverts to the isha herself. So the Gemara now analyzes Rabbi Akiva and says, you know, objects because it's not consistent. If we're going to say that every single restriction, every single condition that the Torah sets is only deciding whether the father has the rights or the rights go to the isha herself, well then we're going to come to some really strange conclusions. That when the Torah says nara, which means that she's up to but not yet at the age of bogeris of 12 and a half, that means that the father's rights are limited to a nara, but in the case of bogeris, she herself collects the knas. Well, for example, when the Torah sets the condition that she's a basula, what the Torah means is, according to if Rabbi Akiva is going to be consistent, is that in the case of a basula, the father gets the knas. In the case of a ba'ula, she collects the knas. And that's impossible. You know, we never found any shita, even Rabbi Akiva would say that a bogeris collects knas or a ba'ula collects knas. But rather, we must assume that nara and basula are conditions that are absolute, not just in terms of who collects the knas, but when there is a knas. And if we apply that consistently, that's called legamre, then we should apply it even in the case of Asher Lo Orosa. That when the Torah stipulates that she was a woman who was never married, that's an absolute stipulation, an absolute condition, and it applies to knas itself. Is she included in knas or not? And at this point, the Gemara has to reinterpret Rabbi Akiva. What Rabbi Akiva is going to do is, he's going to prove that when it says Asher Lo Orosa, those words Asher Lo Orosa are coming not to describe the woman who's included in Knas, but rather they become a what's called a Gzeres Shava. And we're assuming now that any words in the Torah that are necessary for Gzeres Shava play a role of Gzeres Shava, and that's it. They don't play any other roles. And as we're not going to use a Gzeres Shava pasuk or words in a pasuk for other things, even if those interpretations, those conclusions might seem to be pshuto shel mikra, they seem to be intuitive, nevertheless that pasuk has to be taken out of its context, so to speak, to play the role of Gzeres Shava. Now, what is the purpose of the Gzeres Shava? There's a twofold purpose. We want to know, number one, when the Torah says in the case of Knas, the Torah says Chamishim, and that's in the parasha of Onis. When we get to the parasha of Mafate, There the Torah doesn't say chamishim. The word chamishim is completely omitted. All it says is kesef yishkol gemara besulos, which is a lashon of shkolim. So we don't know how many shkolim in Mefuta. We just know that you pay shkolim. On the other hand, in the parasha of Ones, we know chamishim, but the Torah omits the word shkolim, so we don't know a chamishim of what. So for this, we need Gzeirah Shavah. And the Gzeirah Shavah is going to tell me that just like in the parasha of Ones, the Torah says, Asher lo orasa, so too in the parasha of Mefata. So let's read this inside. This is the last Gemara that we did yesterday.
The review was helpful.
Yes. Amalecha Rabbi Akiva. And we're looking here at about, let's say, maybe it's 10 lines up from the bottom of the page. A little bit earlier, maybe a little bit higher up. On Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Hi, this pasuk Asher Lo Rasa, it's not superfluous, unnecessary, so that we can have the drasha of Rabbi Yosi Aglili, but rather be boile, we need it lichnisanya for the sheet of Rabbi Akiva in the Brisa, which, again, first the Brisa quotes Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Asher Lo Rasa, Prat Lenarish, and Sassan Skashem Laknas, but then Rabbi Akiva says, that Yesh lo Knas, that even though she already was married once, she still is in the parasha of Knas. Uknasolia viha. Okay, so this is going to be the Machlokes, which we're going to pick up later, about two versions of Rabbi Akiva. Our version of the Mishnah is that the Knas goes to the Nara herself. According to the Bryce's, their record of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva's opinion was that the knas goes to the father. Now the Braisa gives us a logical, compelling reason why the knas should go to her father. Vadin no sein, hold via zakoi bekesef kidusheo. Right? In other words, if he marries her off a second time, the first marriage unfortunately ended up with a divorce. Now he's marrying her a second time, she's still in Nara, then the monies that are given to by the Makadish for the Kesef Kiddushin are now given to the father. Right? Via Via Zakai Bekesef Knossa. Now we have a similar concept to Kiddushin in the case of Knas, where the Torah says that that the Knas is paid to the father, not to her. Is Ma Kesef Kiddusha Afal Pishin is Armala. Even after she was married once, the Kesef Kedushin still remains hers. And this Rashi says is based on Lo Matzinu Chiluk B'Torah. The Torah never distinguishes between the first marriage and the second marriage. So the assumption, the premise is that even in the second marriage, the father retains his rights to collect the Kesef Kedushin and pocket it for himself. Is Af Kesef Knasa, where also again the Torah gives him the rights to the money, is it makes no difference whether it's the first marriage or the second marriage, meaning whether the rape took place after she was married or even or before she was married or even after she was married. Is Knas Afal Pishin Isarasin Iskashalavia? Imke Matamaloba Lo Ashalo Rosso. So again, the Brisa first sets the logical background to Rabbi Akiva. Logically, he has an agenda here that the father should remain in the driver's seat, so to speak, to collect the knas. But once she was married, what are we going to do with the pasuk? The pasuk says that the knas is because she was never married. Ashalo rasa. So he says that's mufna. Mufna means that I'm not going to use it in its context, because if I use it in its context, we'll call that pshuto shel mikra. Then it's undermining what we think is the logical conclusion, meaning that just like the father's rights don't change one bit with regard to a Nara, if she got married once, that applies not only to Kesef Kiddushin, but likewise to Knas. So what's Asher Lo Rasa? That she's never been married. So it must be Mufta. It must be Mufta means it has to be taken out of context. as something that's superfluous, and it allows us to move forward, to spring forward with what's called the Gzeira Shavah. L'hakishlo v'ladun heimenu Gzeira Shavah. And what's the Gzeira Shavah? Nemar kan here in the parasha of Onis, it says lo sar l'asher lo rasa. V'nemar l'halon in the parasha of Mefat, it says asher lo rasa. So what the Torah is trying to teach me is the Gzeira Shavah. And there are two laws that we derive from this Gzeira Shavah. Number one, Chamishim Kesef. Because again, the Torah doesn't tell you the Mefat exactly how much money she pays. It just gives it a very vague statement of Kemora Besulos. And is Aflahal, and so too in the case of Mefata, it's going to be Chamishim. The secret number, the magic number is 50. And now we're going to go the other direction, right? Because Zereshavah goes in both directions. It's Malahalon. Just like in the case of Mefuta, the Torah specifies that you pay Shkolim, because it says Kesev Yishkol, is Afkan and Ones, which just says Chamishim Kesev. It doesn't tell you it's Shkolim. Is Shkol. We know that the Chamishim is Shkol. It's not Mos, it's not Dirim, it's not other currencies, it's got to be Shkol. And this opens up a pathway, in a sense a pipeline that goes in both directions, connecting Onus and Mefata for all the different derivations that we need. We're going to equate them based on this Gzeira Shavah. So we're taking the Asher Lo Orasa out of context. It's like we're putting it in a little square box and we're picking it up and we're using it as a Gzeira Shavah. And it's not to be understood in its context. Whereas Rabbi Yossi Aglili assumes that we need Asher Lo Orasa. Again, we're going to have to know how Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to derive all the conclusions of the Gzeira Shavah, because he doesn't have the possibility of the Gzeira Shavah. He doesn't have what's called Muftim, because Rabbi Yossi Aglili uses Asher Lo Orasa in its context to mean that a woman who was already past Erusin, even though she got a divorce, and even though she's still a Vesula, but nevertheless she doesn't collect knots. So according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the Asher Lo Orasa should be read kipshuto, you know, in its context. It's not mufna, it's not considered something that's extra. And then we're going to have to ask, well, if Rabbi Yossi Aglili doesn't have the Gzeira Shavah, how is he going to derive those conclusions from the Gzeira Shavah? So that's all what we did yesterday. What we're up to today is the last two lines on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Rabbi Akiva. My chazis dasher lo orasa l'gzeira shava ubesula lema'ute ba'ula. Okay, we're about to turn to Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, but first let me give you an introduction here based on the two lines at the end of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. The Gemara doesn't understand. There are certain words in the parasha which can be interpreted in two ways. They can either be interpreted as an absolute condition, meaning they tell you when there is knas and when there's no knas, or they can be interpreted as mufna. Mufna means as out of context, meaning as extra and superfluous in their context. That those words are not setting up conditions, but rather setting up a gzeira shavah. Now, amongst various words that appear in both Onis and Mefata, the two parashios, you know, in Mishpatim and in the case of Mefata, and in Kitetze in the case of Onis, we have the following three candidates. We have one phrase that appears both that's called Asher Lo Orasa. We have another phrase that appears in both cases that's called Besula. And we have a third case of a word that's called Nara. So these are the key, you know, the key words in both of these two parashios, and they're the same in both. Theoretically, any of those words could be candidates for Gzeira Shavah. Why? Because they appear in both parashios. And Rabbi Akiva points his finger at the phrase Asher Lo Orasa, which appears in both parashios, and he identifies that as the Gzeira Shavah. The Gemara wants to know, and hence it's not a condition in Knas. Correct? It's not a condition in Knas because it's Mufnet. It's not to be taken within its context, as if it's setting up a restriction or a condition in Knas. So the Gemara now attacks Rabbi Akiva and says, well, Rabbi Akiva, there are a number of other words in the parasha that you can take out of context, consider them mufneh, and use them for Gzeira Shavah. Who says that you have to point your finger, you know, that what's it called when you spin a roulette wheel? What's that little pin, not a pin.
The,
I don't
slot,
know
the, thing,
the thing that stops and lands on a certain number. I don't know what the word for that is. You know. Anyway, so why does Rabbi Akiva, when he spins this wheel, and there's so many different candidates, there are three different candidates of which word is going to be the Gzeir Shava word, why does he end, you know, why does he land at these words, Asha Lo Rasa? So first the Gemara says, let's try Besula. Now, if Besula is going to be taken out of context and used as a Gzeir Shava, then we're going to come to the following conclusion, that Ba'ula is not excluded from Knas. Why? Because the word Basula, you think, might exclude a Ba'ula. Well, I have news for you. The word Basula is considered Mufta. Mufta means take it out of context and use it for Gzeir Shava.
Except that in one of those parshas, the word Betula appears twice, which we actually...
Okay, we'll get to that too, hopefully. Okay. But right now, the Gemara is asking, and now we're turning to Lamed Chesam, and Beis Ema, why not say the exact opposite? That's whenever you see the words Maichazis, you're always going to see the word Ema Ipcha. You know, say it the other way around. That the word Besula is going to be the word, the key word for the Gzer Shavu, which means that Besula is no longer... understood in its context as a precondition for Knas, which would mean that at this point Besula does not exclude Ba'ula, correct? And you'll take a look at Rashi six lines down from the top, and Rashi says V'lav le'ma'ute Ba'ula. You can underline those three words. That now in the Gemara's Kasha, the Gemara's attack against Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara's objecting by saying, well, let's use the word Besula as Gzeir Shava, and that's going to teach me Kesef Chamishim, and it's got to be Shkolim, and so forth and so on. Well, now it's no longer excluding Ba'ula. Why? Because I've taken it out of context. I'm using it for Gzeir Shava in both parashios. So nowhere, neither in Onis or in Mefata, is there a precondition that she has to be a Besula. And you and I understand that that's a pretty impossible, untenable position. But the Gemara still has the right to ask Rabbi Akiva, why do you put your finger on Asher Lo Rasa? Why not put your finger down on Besula? And therefore, it would not exclude a Ba'ula. And what would Asher Lo Rasa be? Now that we have the word Besula for the Gzeir Shava, I no longer need Asher Lo Rasa for the Gzeir Shava, and if I could use it within its Pshuto Shemikri in its context, Kipshuto, and it means Pratlin Irish and Asasim is Garsha, which is Rabbi Yossi Aglili's interpretation, meaning that a woman, in order to be included in the parish of Knas, she has to be Asher Lo Orasa, as opposed to a Nara Shenis Arsa, even though she's still a Besula. Nevertheless, she's Nis Arsa, and therefore that takes her out of the parish of Knas. Okay. Now, Rashi points out over here, you see, I read the first three words of Rashi, six lines down from the top, V'lav Lamute Besula, right? I'm sorry, Lav Lamute Ba'ula. Then Rashi adds another word, Biznus. Now the reason why Rashi has to add the word Biznus over here is because at this point in the Gemara's objection against Rabbi Akiva, we're going to take Asher Lo Orasa literally, which means that she was never married before. And that's the precondition for the parasha of Onus of Mefata and Knas. Now we can no longer say that in the case of Ba'ula, because we're saying now that if we're using Besula for the Gzeir Shava, then it doesn't exclude a Ba'ula. Ba'ula is included in Knas. It can no longer be a Ba'ula within the framework of marriage. Because if it was a Ba'ula within the framework of marriage, then she's already been Orasa. She's already had Erisin. And now we're assuming, like Rav Yossi Aglili's pshat, that Asher Lo Orasa excludes a woman who already had an Erisin. So therefore Rashi has to add the word Znus. So I'll just read to you a question here from the Tosus Yeshanim. Now in some Masechtas, the Tosus Yeshanim is printed on the page. I don't have the Tosus Yeshanim, I only have it here in the footnote. But he says the following, Kasha, Hari v'parsha shol mefate muzkar pa'amayin besula. It says ki yifate ish besula and kesef yishkol kemor ha-besulos. So, if you're going to tell me that one of these besulas is necessary for Gzeir Shava, I still have another word, basula, that can teach me lamute ba'ula. So why does Gemara assume, as Rashi points out, lav lamute ba'ula, that according to this kasha of the Gemara, ba'ula would be included in the parasha? What about the second basula? And his answer is the following. Rabbi Akiva lomed kimor ha-besulos, right, the second time it says besula, in the parasha Mefata, it says kimor ha-besulos. He's learning a whole different din from that phrase in the Torah. Has nothing to do with onus of Mefata. It appears coincidentally in the parasha of Mefata, but has nothing to do with Mefata. And what's that? That's the din of Ksuba Doraisa. Let me just mention in passing, something that would require hours and hours of work. There's a fundamental machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. We don't know exactly where Rabbi Akiva stands in this machlokas, whether Ksuba is Doraisa or it's an enterprise that was instituted by rabbinic law. It's a Takanas Chachamim. And there's one man, the other, who says that Ksuba is Doraisa. Well, I looked through the Torah, I didn't find it. Where is it, Doraisa? So the Gemara answers, it's in this parasha Mefata, because the Torah says, Kimor HaBesulos. What's Mohar HaBesulos? Mohar means like a dowry. The dowry that's given a Besul, that's what he should be paying as a Knas, which is 50 Shkolim, the equivalent of 200 Zuz. So the question is, what is Kimor HaBesulos? So we think that we have to understand Kimor HaBesulos in its context. But the Tosi Shanim is saying that according to this presentation, that I need Besula not to exclude Ba'ula, but rather out of its context to create this Gzeirah Shavah, and a Ba'ula is included in the Parashah of Knas. So what are you going to do with the second time that it says Besula? In other words, it's not just haphazard that the Torah mentions Besula in the Parashah of Mefata, and we're going to use that for Gzeirah Shavah. The Torah twice mentions Besula, but that's what the Tosi Shanim answers, that the second time it says Besula, it says Kesev Yishkol Kimor HaBesulos. That's not going to be relevant for the parasha of Mefata so much. It's really relevant for the parasha of Ksuba. And in general, when a man marries a woman who's never been married before, is Kesev Yishkol Kimor HaBesulos, he has to pay a Ksuba. Not really pay the Ksuba, but he has to be Mischayev. He has to commit himself to the Ksuba. It's a conditional Mischayev.
So according to this, Mohar is not something I pay at the time of Erusin, but it's something I may have to pay if I
divorce my wife or if I die and they collect it from my yorshim.
But so, if somebody, the mandarma that holds that this is that the zuba is not the rice, it's the rubana, what do they hold that extra basula is for?
Right. So the Gemara is going to say that the extra word basula is. Now we need a chazor of the first part of this parak. Which I was thinking that maybe when we get to the end of the parak, which we're not so far away, that maybe we should go back to the beginning of the parak and review it, and now you're proving that you're right. So in any event, I don't have the right Gemara now, and we're really in a pressure of time, so I'm going to put your question on the back. You'll take a look at the first Gemara of Chavtes Amid Beis, and the Gemara says, why do we need Besula three times? But in the meantime, if you don't mind, let's just try to get... I don't want to lose the focus of our understanding of what's going on over here. Mistabra, the Gemara answers that it's logical that Asher Lo Rasa is going to be chosen as the Gzeirah Shavah. Why? Shani Korei Ba, in the case of Nara Shenasasa Mizgasha, Nara Basula. Meaning that the simple understanding of the Torah is that the description of the woman in the parasha of Knas is a Nara Basula. That description applies even if she had an erusin, because she still remains a Nara Basula. You know, she's still within a 12-month period of Naras, and she's still a Basula because they never consummated the marriage.
Sorry. If I recall, when in the beginning of the parak, we actually used all three. We used all six words. There are three Naras and three Basulas.
Right. So what do we learn from the extra Basula?
Right. Why is it even bringing up the possibility of using it as a Gzeirah Shavah here if it's already being used?
Well, what is it used for?
One of the uses of the Basula was in fact the Gzeirah Shavah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have to go through the Gemara again, Rav Osa. I just want to get to a certain point in this sugya. So again, do we have a grasp here on the methodology of this sugya? What is the structure of this sugya? The structure of this sugya is to try to see where we could cut our losses, so to speak. In other words, if we want to take something out of context and use it for Gzeirah Shavah, what is the fallout? You know, how much damage is that going to cause? So what Rabbi Akiva is arguing is that the least damage would be to take the words Asher Lo Orasa out of context. Why? Because if we free this parasha of Asher Lo Orasa, we don't lose the rest of the parasha. We still gain, we're still within the framework of number one, Nara, and number two, Besula.
That's what Ani Kore means? I can still read the pasuk.
Right, I can still fulfill Ani Kore Ba. In other words, with regard to this woman who's Nisarsa and Nisgash, I could still call her, in other words, I could still include her in Nara Besula. Uh-huh. So that this is the closest affinity I could have to the simple understanding of the Torah. Namely, that you require a Nara and a Besula. If you're going to introduce Nara, Asher Lo Orasa into the, what I call the Pshuto Shemikri, into the condition framework, then why is that so? I mean, she's not missing any of the other conditions. She seems to have most of what you need. You know, she has all that it takes to make up this description, this profile of a woman for Knas. So the Gemara says the following: Adarama, I have a compelling logic that Besula should be chosen for the Gzeirah Shavah. And why is that? Shareni Koreba Asher Lo Orasa. No, she's a Ba'ula, correct. But, just one second. But she never had a marriage relationship, right? Again, let's go back to Rashi again. Rashi says Ba'ula means what? Biznus. Everybody have that? That's an important word in Rashi. You can't forget that word. So Ba'ula means biznus. So she's number one, a Ba'ula. But she's not a Ba'ula who was ever married. She didn't have that Ba'ula in the framework of marriage. So we can still apply her to the description as Lora. And she's still a Nara. So why don't I just say that, you know, in damage control, we have two out of the three. Right? What did Rabbi Akiva have? He had the list of three. You have Nara, you have Besula, and you have Shalom Rasa. He'd rather sacrifice the Shalom Rasa, even if she was married, because she's still a Nara and she's still a Besula. So now the Gemara says, on the contrary, if you're trying to get two out of three, I would say that we're talking about Besula as a Gzeirah Shavah, which means that a Ba'ula in Znus is included in the parasha of Knas, and you'll still get two out of the three, because she's still a Nara, and she's still a Asher Lo Orasa. So again, what compels Rabbi Akiva to assume that Asher Lo Orasa is going to be the subject of the Gzeirah Shavah? Says the Gemara, Mistavra, it's more logical to exclude Ba'ula. Why? Because Ha'ishtani Gufa, Ha'lo Ishtani Gufa. In other words, if the Torah is using a word in its context as a restriction, as a condition to exclude the opposite, then it makes sense that let's exclude the opposite when she has a change in her physical body, meaning that the onus of Mefata, even though he raped this woman and he had a relationship with her, but he didn't really change her that much. She was already a Ba'ula. So it makes sense to say that if we want to impose a knas on the onus or the Mefata, it's because he's going to impact on her and make her change her goof. But if it's a Ba'ula situation, albeit biznus, she's already changed her goof. Masha Enkein says, Rabbi Akiva, in the case of this arson is gasha, since she still retains her goof, because she's still a basula, they didn't consummate the marriage, then we can begin to understand that pagam, you know, that extra negative impact of the Be'ilah of Onus and Mefata, where he changes her goof, it makes her into a Ba'ula. Fekta Gemara for Rabbi Yossi Aglili, he takes Asher Lo Orasa literally, and therefore Hai Svar Minole, how does he know that the Onus, I'm just going to read the Hebrew here, he says, Mehechan Lomeit Shehamat Be'a. Right, we needed the Gzeirah Shavah in order to teach us that the 50, which is undefined in the parasha of Ones, is 50 shkolim. How does he know that the 50 are 50 shkolim? According to Rabbi Akiva, he knows it from Asher Lo Orasa, because that gave him the Gzeirah Shavah. And if in the parasha Mefat it says it says kesef yishkol, which means shkolim, then we therefore through the gzeirah shav apply that to onus. But how do we know that in the according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who doesn't have asher lo rasa, is nafgalei? And this is again the beginning of the perek. This is the part that that Eric, you know, we have to relearn and review. So we'll get a little piece of it at least here. We get this is the beginning of our review of Perek Shlishi. Kesanya, we looked at a brisa in the parashas Mefat. It says kesev yishkol kamara besulos shehaze kamara besulos. In other words, the Mefat has to pay mora besulos. Mora besulos means the sum of money that was set for a besula. Where was it set for a besula? A certain sum of money. And the answer is in the parasha of Onis. Now we flip to the parasha of Onis, and there the Torah says explicitly, Chamishim. And now we put the two together. So we have Kesef Yishkol Kemora Besulos, which is written in the parasha of Mefater. We have Chamishim Kesef in the parasha of Onis. And what we're going to do is, we're going to say the following. That just like in the case of Onus, you have to pay Chamishim Kesef, so too in the case of Mafata, you have to pay Chamishim Kesef. So Ha Besulos is referring to the Besula of Parshas Onus. And it's telling you that the more of the Besulos is the amount of money that you would pay a Besula, which you could derive from the Parshas of Onus. Because there the Torah tells us how much you pay for a Besula, and that's going to be Chamishim Kesef. So even though the Torah gives us a vague phrase, you know, undefined in the case of Mefat, and the Torah just says Kemara Besulos in general without telling you exactly how much you have to pay, but the indication here of Kemara Besulos means that it's a Schum Katsuv. That's what Kemara Besulos means. Schum Katsuv means it's a set amount. Well, where is that set amount? You're saying that Besula. I looked up Besula in the encyclopedia and I found there's a set amount of money that you pay for a Besula. Where do I find that? The Torah is saying Kemora HaBesulos. Well, where is that? I'm lost. What is the Mora HaBesulos? What is the amount of money that you pay for a Besula? And the only answer is to look in another Besula, and that's the Besula in Parshas Onus. And in Parshas Onus it says Nara Besula, and there the Torah specifies that it's got to be Chamishim, it's got to be 50. And once I know that, I go back to the parish of Kemora Besulos and I identify the schum, the what we call the schum katsuv of Kemora Besulos as 50. And that's going to be the method by which Rabbi Yossi Aglili, in the absence of the Gzeir Shav of Asher Lo Aras, is going to derive the conclusion that when the Torah is talking about paying 50, it means 50. When the Torah is talking in the Parsha Mefata about paying Kemora Besulos, it means 50. How do we know that it means Shkolim? Because the Torah says Kesev Yishkol, and Yishkol means Shkolim. And now we're going to understand that when the Torah tells you how much you pay for a Besula, it's going to be the 50 Kesef, and the 50 Kesef is going to be Yishkol, and Yishkol means it's going to be Shkolim. But now the Gemara goes back to the most fundamental part of Asugya. This is the most exciting part. Kasha the Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbi Akiva. We have two versions of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah says that if she had Erisin and then she was divorced, then the Kesef goes, the Knas goes to whom? Goes to the Isha. And in the Brisa, we have a different record of Rabbi Akiva. According to this version, Rabbi Akiva is saying that the money goes to the father. And the Gemara answers, Trei Tanoi Aliba the Rabbi Akiva. There are two versions in the Tanoim themselves, meaning Rabbi Yehuda Nasi decided to transmit Rabbi Akiva the way he heard Rabbi Akiva's statement, but the Braisa heard a different Rabbi Akiva. There was a different version over the course of time. It could be that Rabbi Akiva himself changed his mind. So one version reflects what he thought in his youth, and another, not exactly youth. I mean, he didn't start learning until he was 40. But
looks like youth to me.
Okay, right. It's all relative, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Today, maybe 80 is young. That's, as you get older, you know, you want to push the. So, Bishleim Rabbi Akiva the Masnisin. I understand Rabbi Akiva now in Mishnah, who says that Nisarasim is Garisha. She gets the Knas herself. And the reason for that is because lo asya gzereshova umafka le likra mipashte legamre. What does that mean? That's a heavy statement. The Gemara is claiming now that there's an advantage if you can somehow derive something from the pshat in the pasuk. What do I mean? Instead of taking asher lo orasa out of context and using it for gzeirah shavah, the Mishnah in its version of Rabbi Akiva is going to use asher lo orasa in its context, but it's going to use it as a limitation for the father's rights to the knas. In other words, yesh lachor, we could raise the following question: when the Torah sets up this restriction that she is this condition of asher lo orasa, what is the Torah limiting? Is the Torah limiting her to asher lo orasa as opposed to orasa for knas, meaning the Torah is excluding her from knas? That's Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Or no, the Torah is excluding his rights to collect, because the end of the pasuk says v'nosan l'avia nara. So what we're saying is asher lo orasa, then it's v'nosan l'avia nara. But if she was orasa, then the money goes to the daughter. In other words, we've salvaged the pshuto shel mikra. And that's called legamri. Legamri means that we can understand the pasuk in its context. The Torah emphasizes asher lo orasa as a precondition for the rights of the father to collect the knas. But if she was right, but if she was nisarsa, then she collects the knas.
So if you don't hold that way, then you still have to reconcile that it's saying you're paying the money to the nara at the end of the pasuk. If you're not, so why is the father getting it according to the plain meaning?
Because it's asher lo orasa. Asher lo orasa, then v'nosan l'avia nara.
Right, because exactly, if let's say Rabbi Yossi Aglili, how would he
understands asher lo orasa as part of the beginning of the parasha. The parasha says that, ki yafata ish nara besul asher lo orasa, right? So these are the conditions for the payment of the knas, and they describe the woman who's in this parasha, just like Basula describes the woman and Nara describes the woman. So asher lo orasa comes along Rabbi Akiva and he says no, and we had a whole discussion why Rabbi Akiva did so based on the equation to Kesef Kedushin. So therefore, what we want to do is we want to say that according to Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, we can still salvage the pshuto shel mikra legamre of asher lo orasa. And the asher lo orasa is not a precondition in knas, like the beginning of the pasuk of nara v'sula, but rather it's a precondition in what comes later in the pasuk, v'nosan l'avia nara, to say that she is included in knas, but it's not going to be the father's rishus. And this is based on the fact that once she was married, and the father agreed to marry her off, he already gave up on his rishus.
But I guess what I'm asking is, the end of that, the plain meaning seems to suggest that the payment's made to the Nara, not to the father.
So you're accepting Rabbi Akiva?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rabbi Yosef Aglili, how that end of the verse, the end of the pasuk seems to be saying it's paid to the.
Well, what does it say in the pasuk? I'm not sure. Maybe
I'm just taking what you just said. I
thought the end of the pasuk says v'nasan la'via nara. No, doesn't it say that?
First of all, in Ones, im ma'ein yema'ein avia letita lo kesef yishkok marb to lo. This is not whom he gives it, but presumably to the father. Now, in the mifateh,
but I'm just asking you this time, so we can just,
I'm trying to find it here.
No, I was just saying, let's cut to the chase. We'll open up a chumash. Does it anywhere say that the money goes to her? I don't remember that. No, but I'm asking a different question. Is there any indication in the parasha that she collects?
Okay, so I misunderstood that part.
Okay, so now we get to Rabbi Akiva the Braisa. Rabbi Akiva the Braisa takes asher lo orasa completely out of context. And the reason for that is because he needs asher lo orasa for the gzeira shava. Is asya gzeira shava mafki vipashti dekro, which means he lifts, like it's like a crane. You know, you lift up a piece and you put it elsewhere. And the asher lo orasa doesn't appear in the parasha bipshuto shel mikra. And therefore, there's no condition whatsoever that she has to be a woman of Asher Lo Orasa. And then we go back to the general klolim that apply in the parasha of Enosan Levia Nara, that even though she had been married once before, nevertheless the father remains in the driver's seat and he collects her knas. And if you recall, Rabbi Akiva the Braisa supported that by equating it with Kesef Kedushin, that even after the first marriage, when the father received the Kesef Kedushin, he married her a second time because she was divorced from the first husband, and he again collects the Kesef Kedushin. So that you see, says Rabbi Akiva, that Erisin does not undermine the father's rishus over the Nara. As long as she's a Nara, she's still Binurei Beis Avia. So that the machlokas now between Rabbi Akiva and the Mishnah and Rabbi Akiva and the Braisa is whether or not we should still try to salvage and be loyal to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, or shall we take these words out of context and use them for Gzeira Shava? Amar Rav Nachman. Oh, so Rav Nachman now wants to come and find out if they're according to Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, that us asigzereshav mafka viprashtu dekra, and the zereshav takes the pasuk out of its context, out of its pshuta lagamre. So then it makes sense that there's no difference between a nisarson and not a nisarson. So nothing's changed. Do you follow me? With Erisin, according to Rabbi Akiva in the version of the Braisa, nothing has changed. And it's very odd that the Torah would add something which indicates that it will change, meaning Asher Lo Orasa, that description of the girl has to be relevant to something. Bishleim, if we go through Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, that's very relevant because it's telling me who gets the knas. But according to Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, it's not relevant to anything. You know, it's just a phrase that's used for Gzeirah Shavah, but it doesn't tell me anything in its context whatsoever. The Gemara is not happy with that. Omer Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Kribe, you should change the Kri of the Pasuk. Instead of reading it Asher Lo Orasa, you should read it Asher Lo Arusa. Meaning that right now she's not an Arusa. She got a divorce from her first husband, and then she was raped, but she wasn't raped while she was an Arusa. So the Gemara's not happy with that either, because Arusa Baskila, here we have a principle called Kimle Bidaravadine. Everybody agrees that Velo Yason certainly refers to a Chiv Misa. And if this woman is an Arusa, then she's an Ashes Ish, and the Bia generates a Chiv Misa. So I might have excluded Knas from Kimleib the Ramimine. And in this case of Onus and Mafata, the money that he's paying as a penalty is a Knas, and Kimleib the Ramimine doesn't apply to a Knas. Is there Fafalgav the Miktal, even though he's going to be put to death because he raped a married woman, nevertheless Mishalim, he still has to pay the Knas. Because our principle is Ein Adam Mischai of Misa. If he's paying mama. But as far as the knas is concerned, then we're going to apply the principle. But again, it's all the hava. In other words, why does it have to say that parksuk asher lo arusa? Because otherwise, if it didn't say asher lo arusa, then I would have come to the mistaken conclusion that in the case of an arusa, he does pay knas, despite the fact that he's going to be put to death. And what logic would have drawn me to a very strange conclusion that we're going to put him to death and make him pay the Chamishim Kesef? The answer is because Chamishim Kesef is a Chidush. It's a Knas. And when it comes to a Chidush, we don't apply the principle of Kimlev the Ramina. So that was the Havamina. The Maskon is Ashelo Arasa. Ashelo Arusa. That's how we're going to read it. That she's not married right now. She was married, but she's not married now because she got a divorce from her husband. And hence there will be a knas. There's no kimle rabine because now she's a grusha, we'll call it, but she's certainly not a married woman. Frank the Gemara, but ula rabba di omar chidush u'shachish in Torah v'knas. Afal gav de miktal mishalim is there for Michael Meim. According to Rabba, how are you going to explain this asher lo arusa? According to Rabba, even lemaskana, in the final analysis, halacha lemaisa, in the case of an arusa, he's going to pay knas, even though he's put to death. Because Rabba is the one who embraces that principle called chidush u'shachish in Torah v'knas. that when it comes to Knas, we suspend the principle of Kibleib and the Ramine. Is Michael Meira, how is he going to explain Rabbi Akiva the Braisa? In other words, again, we're back to our question, what does Ashalo Rasa mean? What does it mean in its context that this woman was never married? What do you mean if she was never married? According to Rabbi Akiva, she was married and nothing changed. So the marriage, the erusin, didn't impact as far as Knas is concerned, Ki Uzeh, nothing changed. It still goes to the father. Elo, what we're going to say, Ashalo Arusa, but that doesn't work out according to Rabbah, because Rabbah holds that if she was an Arusa, nevertheless, he would still pay Knas. So the Gemara says, Sarvalaka Rabbi Akiva de Masnisim, that there's no way of reconciling Rabbah with Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa. But that's okay, nothing tragic happened, because we're going to reconcile Rabbah with Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. And then he's going to learn Ashalo Rasa to tell me that the father's rights to the Knas are conditional on the fact that she was not married. Once she's married, she goes out of the Rishus of her father, and the Knas now will accrue to the woman herself, to the Nara herself. Now, the Gemara at this point is going to bring a Braisa about Knas. And the Braisa itself, according to the interpretation of the Gemara, is going to refer to a Narash and his Arasav and his Garash, a Tan Rabbanan, Knasa Lemi. And the Braisa has two opinions. One opinion says La Via, that the Knas is collected by the father. V'yeshomrim Liatzma. So what does that mean, Liatzma? Well, the Torah says, V'nosan La Via Nara. What is Liatzma? Liatzma Amai. Why should it go to her? Omarav Chizda, Hoch Menarish and Isasim is Garish Askinon. When the Yesh Omrim reflects the principle of Liatzma, that she collects Liatzma, that's going to reflect the Shita of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Because Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah holds that if she was Nisarsim and Nisgarisha, then the Knas goes Liatzma, goes to her. The first opinion in this Braisa that says Lavia, that reflects Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa. So that's what Gemara says, Omer Rav Chizda, Hacha ben Nairash and Nisarsim and Nisgarisha Askinon. The subject of this Braisa is Rabbi Akiva, in the case of Nisarsim and Nisgarisha. So the first time in this Braisa holds of Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa, that even in the case of a Narish and a Sarasim and his Garisha, the Knas goes to the father. In other words, that the Erisim doesn't change a thing. But the Yeshom, in the second opinion, holds like Rabbi Akiva now Mishnah, that since she was Nisarasim and his Garisha, she leaves the Rishus of the father, and now she is Zokh in her own Knas. Her father loses his zechiah, his yad in the Knas. Now at this point in the Gemara, we're going to have an analysis of a case of a person who was ma'anes and nara, and then she died before what's called ha'amada bedin. Let's explain. Whenever there's a Knas, the Knas only emerges as a chiyuv, as a monetary obligation that has to be paid once there was ha'amada bedin. Meaning, there has to be a case that's tried in front of a bezdin. In fact, we need a very high-powered bezdin that's called smuchim or mumchim. That I only know because I'm teaching Sanhedrin now. And at that point, when bezdin rules on the case that he's chayv to pay a knas, at that point, the chiv knas emerges. Here's a very strange situation. On the one hand, the siba, the reason that he has to pay the knas, is because she was alive, right? That he had this relationship with her when she was alive. So in a certain sense, the chiyuv knas is already set in stone, but it's not really set in stone because we need Hamad of Adin. We need that the judges decide on the case, and after they rule on the case, then and only then is there a chiyuv knas. So what do we do in this case? Omer Abaye, Ba'aleh Umesa, that somewhere between time T1, when the onus took place, and time T2, we'll call it T3, when the Hamad of Adin took place, there was time T2 right in the middle, and she died now. Is pot. Hopefully she didn't die because of the onus, because if that be the case, they should put him to death. But we're talking about whether or not he has to pay knas. And Abaye says, potter. Why is he potter? Because the Torah says, Shenemar v'nasan, I'll read the whole pasuk, ha'ish ha'shochev imo le'avi ha'na'ara, so there's a father, and there's a nara, and she's alive. Chamishim kesef. And according to Abai's drasha, the word nara is coming to exclude mesa. So we pay the father of the nara velola vi mesa. Now, I just want to add a little bit of love this here, if you don't mind. I think conceptually, what the Gemara is saying is that really the knas belongs to her. And if she's not alive, there's no knas. The father is only collecting the knas because he has rights over her. But the real knas should be paid to her. So when the Torah says, "V'nasan lavi hana'ara," it means that he, the father, has rights to this knas because of the nara, because she really should be collecting the knas. Has anyone heard of mishmush nachlo? No. Let me just tell you what mishmush nachlo is. I'm just using it as a what we call in Yiddish a beispiel, an analogy. In mishmush nachlo, what happens is you've got a grandfather, you have a son, and a grandson. What happens is that when the father dies, his son inherits him. But let's say Nebuch, the son died before the father died. So in that case, the grandson inherits his grandfather. Now, there are two ways of understanding that, and there are many, many differences in halacha.
Wait. You said this. Oh, the son dies before the grandfather. But okay.
So one way of understanding it is that the son, even though he's dead, he inherits his father and then bequeaths that nachla over to his son. The other way is to say is that there's a direct relationship between the grandfather and the grandson, and here the same thing. When we say that he pays the avia nara, there are two ways of understanding that. One way is to say that the nara is out of the picture. There's a direct relationship now between the money that has to be paid and the father, and his rights are primary rights. The other way is saying, no, his rights only accrue because he, so to speak, inherits what his daughter gets. But she's really the Machayev of Kedas. And the Nafkavini is going to be Mesa, because Abai is going to say Mesa, then there's no Chiv Knas, because the Chiv Knas is established in the Almar Vidin. She's already dead.
But Nara is only until she's 12 and a half, right? So let's say she turns 30, you know, she turned 12 and a half in one day before
Almar Vidin. That's also an interesting question. But then the Gemara is going to say that since she's alive, so she has rights to collect something that was the chiv for that payment was set when she was a nara. But if she's not alive at all, then she doesn't even have a schus tvia. You know, it's a dead person, can't be tovea. You know, all of Besdin and Dinimomenes requires what's called a tvia. All right, Rabbi, we'll stop here. Yeah, I'll listen to you as I'm packing up. Because
if she's alive, does it go to her father or to her if she becomes, if she's no longer nara? She's alive, but she's now, turned 13. Does the fine go to her? Does it go to her father?
Right. The fine goes to her because the father
even though it hurt when it was. Right. When she was
right. I mean, there's a lot of love to see, you know.